to the 25 and slides. 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Did he spike it in time? Didn't get it spiked in time.
They haven't said anything official.
That's the end of the game.
Oh, wow. There you go.
TSN 1200.
Love it. Welcome back, everybody. 9:14 on a snowy, stormy Monday morning here in Ottawa. J.R. Zimmer and Hammer with you. Like, it's really coming down right now. Like, we're downtown here in the Byward Market. I don't remember the last time I've seen it, you know. I don't remember the last time I've seen it coming, like, the snow part. We see wind before with a little bit of snow and creates whiteout conditions. Like, this is a lot of snow falling right now, and that's going to be the story here for the next couple hours. So we'll keep you updated on the traffic, but if you don't have to go anywhere, just hunker down. It's Martin Luther King Day. Your kids are at home because the schools are closed. There's five NHL games on this afternoon. You can just fill your boots. Yeah. Six NBA games and a playoff football game tonight.
Yeah, and full marks to Hammer. He summoned Big Red. He'll be here by 10 to clean off our vehicles and and warm them up. Just like we play in the National Hockey League, JR.
Yeah, cars nice.
Cars will be warm and running, and we'll just get out of here and get home.
Okay, so super wild card weekend. Five games in the books. I think it's been okay wild card weekend.
Okay.
Two great games, yeah. Two very competitive games. I won't say great games, very competitive games. Three dogs, yeah. If we're being quite honest with ourselves. Yeah. And I think the question being asked, and fairly so, and we all know what the answer is and the why is, and it's because of money. You know, the extra team being added on each side of the playoffs, Philadelphia and Pittsburgh. I mean, I'm an Eagles fan. I can say they're a playoff team, but they were soundly outclassed yesterday. Yeah. And Pittsburgh was soundly outclassed by Kansas City last night. Like, we don't need an extra playoff team in each side. Mm-hmm. Just creates for a couple more mismatches. Mm-hmm. But we know that tens and hundreds of millions of dollars are at stake on TV contracts, and that's why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, and I don't mind a JR, but I agree with that. The other thing I kept, and I guess it was more in the Tampa Bay game and maybe on the Cincinnati side, every time I saw somebody dropping with an ankle injury, I know it's a contact sport, but I kept thinking to myself, on some of these fellas that are 370,000 pounds and they're running around, I'm thinking, does it matter that you don't have a bye week? Like, how much of a factor and how much of a stress on the body? And as I said, I know these injuries can happen all the time, but a couple of the games, it's like, wow, are they going to actually have enough players to finish the game? In Cincinnati's case, I mean, they were down and, you know, Tampa Bay lost two of their best D linemen.
Yeah. Think about it. Think about how much of an advantage, even more so, it is now for the teams that get a bye.
Oh, totally.
First of all, because you get a bye and only one team does. And secondly, there was an extra game this year as well. So we had an extra game and we've only got one team on each side getting a bye. Let's put the questions to the guy who joins us each and every Monday morning to talk NFL. It is our football analyst, Duke Ellingson. Duke, you hunkering down after a busy football weekend?
Well, I am actually in the office. I'm asking myself why I drove here, I got to get back home at some point too. It was a great weekend. I was just listening to you guys' comments. I think a lot of them are very valid, including the seventh playoff team in both conference. I mean, we were a couple of scenarios away from getting Carson Wentz and Trevor Siemian at quarterback in the NFL playoffs. So maybe we should have been thankful, but I think I would agree after last couple of days that there's one too many teams and they should go back, but they never will.
Nope. That the horse is out of the barn, my friend. There's too much money to be made with extra playoff games. So we've had three dog games and two very competitive games. But let's start with the headline story, which is the Niners Cowboys game from last night, which went right down to the final play of the game. We played that, and that was Dallas radio with the call right there, a Dak Prescott's wild dash up the middle. You probably, Duke, like everybody has, heard the explanation, and Mike McCarthy said, good call. Dak Prescott obviously thinks it was the right call. It wasn't something he decided on the spot. It was a called play. Did you think it was the right decision to do what they did, taking the chance that the clock might run out, or were they better off taking two shots from the 40 with what would have been, I guess, kind of Hail Marys?
Yeah, you know what? I think I'm okay with the play call, and I would like to give, you guys know I'm not a huge Cowboys fan. I would give them a lot of credit. The play designs that they ran when they got the ball back, and by the way, talk about totally outthinking yourself. Why in San Francisco's case on 4th and inches are you bothering to motion your left tackle over to the right side of the line. I know they were trying to make Dallas think, okay, we're going to try to run over that side where we have the extra linemen. But in that moment, I mean, all you needed to do was exactly what Garoppolo did, which was sneak it, and the game's over. So I have no idea what they were thinking there. Talk about overthinking it. But, no, Dallas, when they got the ball, I mean, the first little hook and lateral play was very nicely designed and got them a nice chunk and got them out of bounds. And then the little swing pass, because of the way San Francisco was so far off the ball, got them another nice chunk and out of bounds. So I love the design to getting them in position to take a couple of shots at the end zone. And I don't even mind the call in the sense that it was a quick way to get down the field a little bit closer so that you could take a legit shot. But why Dak Prescott chose to run the extra 5 or 7 yards, that's the part I do not understand. And the rest of it in terms of not knowing that you have to hand it to the ref, complete lack of preparedness, which to me is on Mike McCarthy 100%. So I didn't mind the call. He just should have gone down 5-7 yards earlier. They would have had the last shot. But I'm certainly not adverse to the idea of two Hail Marys either. I just thought this one was well-conceived, just not well-carried out.
Had the Cowboys ended up with the Eagles as a matchup, they could have got by on some of the mistakes. But going into this, Duke, it couldn't have been a worse matchup. And everyone said that going in. And then to have the lack of discipline, all the penalties. Yeah, I mean, how do you explain that when you just needed that so badly against what was pretty much a 50-50 match?
Oh, it could not. Truer words have never been spoken, Zimmer. I mean, the lack of discipline. You know, it's like when the lights go on for that team in the playoffs, everything just goes, you know, to the wind, and they don't seem to be able to match other teams' intensity. They don't seem to be able to play well in critical situations. The penalty at the end, the other one that people don't talk about is when they actually had them stopped on the first series of plays, they would have got the ball back with about 2.5 minutes left. And I think it was Randy Gregory literally tackles one of the San Francisco linemen. Like, you're going to get called for that every time, and it gave San Francisco a fresh set of downs. So I just don't get it. And I think, I mean, to me right now, given the talent on that team, given the expectations, and given his history with big game coaching, I don't know how Jerry Jones can't walk away and move away from or move on from Mike McCarthy. Mm.
14 penalties against Dallas, which ties an NFL playoff record. Everybody says that penalties are a reflection of the coach. And I repeat that, and I believe it, but you played the game. So why are penalties, which I guess at the end of the day are a lack of discipline, why is that more on the coach than the players, in your opinion, if you believe that?
Yeah, I'm not sure I entirely believe. You can't, I mean, you can prepare your team. You can talk about discipline. You can do all those things. But in the moment, things like holding calls, it usually happens when an offensive lineman just gets beat and he reaches or he grabs, and that's just, you know, just reaction. I'm not sure you can put that on a coach. But I think the false start kinds of penalties, those other ones where you're grabbing and doing things that you shouldn't, you know, the pass interference, all the things that are technique-driven, you have to put on, and delay of games. I mean, and I'll tell you what, I don't know if you guys have talked about it yet, but what happened after the fake punt,
yeah.
I mean, might go down in history as the strangest and worst decision. Like, what is it you're trying to accomplish by leaving your special teams on the field trying to, I know they're trying to goad San Francisco into a timeout, but when you realize it's not working, you know, and you run yourself out of time, and then you get a delay of game penalty. That's just
you're down 16 points in the fourth quarter. You're burning clock.
That's it. At least they burned 30 seconds trying to, after a huge play that would have given them so much momentum. Like, it's unbelievable.
And I don't understand the rules well enough, guys, because I thought it was pretty cool. Does that also speak to Tony Romo maybe not being hard enough on the Cowboys in that case? Because I'm kind of watching and thinking, well, this must be something really smart they're doing.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of people wish that game was on Fox.
Yeah.
There you go. All right, from a San Francisco point of view, we spent lots of time talking about all the penalties and the lack of discipline for the Cowboys. Did you think that San Francisco was full value when it's all said and done for the win?
I think they were. I mean, I think they brought a lot of pressure on Dak Prescott. I don't think they had, going into the game, I don't think a lot of us thought they could do that. And so I do think they did a great job on defense, and they could have scored some touchdowns when they got in the red zone a couple times. But overall, I thought they ran it incredibly well, as we expected them. And then apart from the one interception that Garoppolo threw late, I thought he was pretty solid. So, yeah, I think they definitely deserved the victory, and they played in a more disciplined fashion, except for what happened on that 4th and inches.
Would you have gone – there were actually 2 fourth down. There was one in the series before for San Fran. from midfield where they had a fourth and one. Wouldn't have run out the clock like the last one you mentioned would have, but it would have allowed them to get a first down and force the Cowboys to burn timeouts, or certainly would have taken a lot of time off the clock. Are you an advocate, in a situation like that where they were up, in the fourth quarter, late in the fourth quarter, are you an advocate of going for it on fourth and one, or do you tend to do, as we have seen football coaches do for a long time, tend to punt and try to make your defense hold?
Well, to me, it's always situational, and it's always based on how the game has gone. I like to use the analogy that if the game was 43-40 in that case and you couldn't stop the other team, I think then you have to go for it. If you've had a really good good run on defense and you feel confident that you can get the stop, then I think maybe you punt. So in that situation, I was just surprised, given the way things have gone in this year in the NFL, I was really surprised they did punt.
Duke, did the checklist for the Buffalo Bills check off everything against your lowly Pats? I'm a big Bucks fan.
No, Sarah's a huge Bucks fan.
Did you look at that game and just say, hey, it's almost, I said, to the Red Sox beating the Yankees, the Cavs beating the Penguins, where, hey, you know, you just kick some serious butt, and now looking, you know, with eight standing, say, hey, why not us this year?
Hey, you know what? That was the most impressive offensive performance I can ever remember, and it's not rocket science to suggest that a team that scored seven consecutive touchdowns and didn't punt and didn't kick a field goal all night is exactly what I just said. But no, that was just so impressive, and I don't even know. My wife actually asked me after the game, how come New England couldn't stop Buffalo? I had no answer. I mean, it didn't matter what they did, run, pass, using Josh Allen as a runner. And I thought that was early in the game. That was kind of what broke the Patriots' spirit, a couple of those Josh Allen runs, and I think they realized this was going to be a real long night.
So it set itself up now for Buffalo, Kansas City, after the Chiefs take care of Pittsburgh. I don't think anybody was surprised by that last night. We can preview that on Friday. But just in terms of Josh Allen, there was a point in the middle of the year, Duke, where Buffalo kind of, I don't know what happened. Remember they lost to Jacksonville? Mm-hmm. There was a run of games there where it's like, well, I guess the Bills are overrated, and then some light has gone off here in the last month. Have you put your finger on what exactly it is that Buffalo has found?
That's a good question. I mean, one of the things that they've done a lot better in the last, say, 3-4 weeks is they've been able to run the ball more consistently. I think early in the year they struggled to find the guy, and now that Devin Singletary is there, I think they really have a legit running game. And it doesn't have to just be Josh Allen. So I think that's been the missing piece for them. And then Josh Allen's overall accuracy and confidence. And we tend to, change our narratives in the middle of seasons when we see something happening and think all of a sudden a team can't figure it out or won't figure it out. And I think we just, we probably gave up on the Bills a little early. But I think right now, of all the teams that Kansas City would not like to see coming into Arrowhead, it's the Bills.
When you watch Cincinnati, is that, for me, it's probably the first time I watched them all a whole game, Duke. Chance to see how dynamic an offense we know about. But also when they talked about just a lot of their team building, right, and bringing in the proper veterans, bringing in people that had won to really shift that culture around.
I thought that was an interesting graphic they put up early in the game with the four free agents that they signed in the offseason, all on defense and all from kind of teams and franchises that have had winning traditions and winning cultures. And I think you're right, Simmer, that has made a huge difference to that team. And you put a legitimate sort of big-time quarterback into that franchise, get him some weapons, and you see kind of what happens. Now, at the same time, I would suggest that the Raiders kind of hung in there all day, and one of the things that Cincinnati is going to need to do a better job of on the weekend is scoring touchdowns when they're down in the red zone.
There was a controversial moment in that game with an inadvertent whistle where the play was allowed to stand, even though the rule specifically states that if there's an inadvertent whistle, the play has to be replayed. Do you think, like a lot of people just kind of said, hey, listen, he would have caught it, would have been a touchdown anyway. Why would they go back and do that? Like, what were your thoughts on that play in particular?
Well, it's the first time in a while that I've seen that happen, and I wasn't sure of the rule. But what bothered me the most was it was so evident that the whistle blew prior to the end of the play. And that is the rule. You're supposed to replay it in that situation. And whatever happened on the field between the referees that were having that discussion, one of them didn't want to admit it, or one of them was trying to say, hey, no, I didn't blow it until after the play was over, but it was so clear that it was blowing early that the play should have been called back. And who knows? I mean, that the Raiders could have intercepted the ball on the next play. So it's a pretty big play in a close game.
In the case of Burrow, not that it has to be, but it's not the sexiest franchise. What does it mean to have a local guy like that that is so darn proud and wants to rescue this franchise from not having won a playoff game in 31 years?
Well, if anybody remembers his Heisman Trophy speech when he talked about how proud he was to be an Ohioan by birth and how proud he was of that state and how, you know, just how much it meant to him, I think you realize what that means to the franchise because, as we all know, Cincinnati's been a bit of a gong show for a long time, and it's been a place that not a lot of free agents want to go to. So I think you can quickly change that narrative when you have some success and you have it with a guy that really represents that state so well.
Talking football with Duke Ellington, from the Raiders' point of view, they've got an open question about the coach. The players were supportive after the game for the interim coach staying after he came in for John Gruden. But boy, Duke, I watched that game play itself out, and that was, you know, it was a mirror of the Cowboys. Undisciplined, too many penalties, and poor clock management. And to me, just like I think the Cowboys, if they want to win, have to move on from Mike McCarthy. I just, you know, and as much as beloved as Bisaccia seems to be by the Raiders, that was just a, in my opinion, a poorly coached game.
Well, it was. And if you think about the penalties, we talked about the holding penalties in key situations. The situation early in the game when the kid let the kickoff go out of bounds, stepped in bounds and then walked off the field and gave him the ball at the 2-yard line. Things like that. You know, they are coaching, they are preparedness, but I would probably give Bisaccia a bit of a pass. It's his first time as a head coach, and he was put into a pretty tough situation. So I would like to see him get that opportunity, but I agree with you at the end of the day, when those kinds of things happen, it really does land on the coach.
Don't you think with the Raiders, though, both in coach and quarterback, they're going to go big name hunting? How do you like that one?
They always have, and we'll have to see who ends up. But I'll just say it again. I'd like to see Bisaccia get that chance.
Okay, all right. And let's end. I briefly touched on Kansas City and Pittsburgh. Last game of the day, last game of last night was it was a poor start by both teams, offensively at least. And then Kansas City said, yeah, we're going to go ahead and score touchdowns on six straight possessions and put this game out of reach. Patrick Mahomes seems to be on fire, but that is likely the end for Ben Roethlisberger. You know, first ballot Hall of Famer, in your opinion?
100%. Absolutely. Two Super Bowl wins, top five in a lot of lifetime categories, career categories for sure. I would just say this, though, about last night. If the Kansas City Chiefs don't put points up on the boards on their first six possessions like they did last night against Buffalo, I'm not so sure the result's going to be the same.
Great point by you. Just in terms of the Steelers quarterback, they've got Mason Rudolph under contract for next year. They kept Dwight Haskins, or had the option, who was a Washington first rounder a couple of years ago. Do you think they try both of those guys, or do you think, speaking of big games, that Pittsburgh would be in the market for a more marquee quarterback?
They are definitely going to go after somebody. That's a pretty good team across the board. If number 18 can learn to catch the ball, their offense will be even better. But no, I think that's a team that's, you know, legitimately a contender, and I think they need a quarterback that can take them to the next level. So I do expect them to go, the free agent route. Maybe we talked about Russell Wilson a couple of weeks ago. I'm not so sure that's likely, but I think they're going to go after somebody that they feel can plug and play.
All right. We'd love to go through all the points from our football picks, but hey, we got another game to go tonight. So
Duke, I don't know when you were introduced, if you notice you're now an analyst instead of an expert, but...
But why get ahead of ourselves?
Downgrade? Yeah, what's the next downgrade after analyst?
If you keep leading the pool, I'll find an adjective, okay? All right, you just hang in there. All right, we'll chat again Friday and preview the divisional round this weekend, but appreciate the time this morning.
Sounds great, guys.
All right, there's Duke Ellington, our football expert, joining us at the Gabriel Pizza Hotline. Gabriel Pizza is the official pizza of the Ottawa Senators. We'll take a break. 9:33, come back. We'll turn our attention back to the Sens. They're scheduled to be back on the practice ice at 10:30 this morning in the midst of the storm, getting set for a busy week ahead with four games on the agenda starting tomorrow night with the Buffalo Sabres in town. We'll have that for you next right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. 9:43 on a very snowy, stormy Monday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. Text comes in at 12-1200. I work for a contractor that works for the city, so I've got to be out. There are cars stuck at most intersections in Kanata. Stay home, people. We can't clean this stuff up if there are cars in the way. That comes from unsigned.
Yeah. And survey says the worst drivers in the city are located in Kanata.
Why does the survey say that?
I've heard that too, Simmer. It's because you live
because
in
Kanata. Because you live there. I don't know. What do you mean?
That's why. I've heard the same thing, buddy.
Yeah.
They're not smart enough to go to Kanata Ford and get a good vehicle.
Now you're talking right there. What
that
else?
That is some sucking up, man.
Well, actually, no. The Centrum was made to create bad drivers and get people stuck, right?
That part I can agree with. Hey, guys, who's helping AJ get to work today?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We won't find out until noon when he discovers his vehicle is not able to be accessible.
We're hoping our friend Mr. Jackie Beck will be able to walk to work today.
I was going to say, this is about a 10-minute walk?
Yeah. He is the person I should be least concerned about being able to get. Now, Creech has arrived.
Yeah.
And speaking of which, Creech comes from the south end of Kanata.
Yeah.
He said it took him an hour. And normally 20 minutes, so triple time, which is kind of par for the course. But he said he jumps onto 416, the last part, at Hunt Club, and said that's a parking lot.
Oh, okay.
Do not take the 416 in any direction.
Huh.
Bad idea.
Okay.
All right. 15% visibility in real Nepean, writes Unsigned.
So that would be the Green Bank Woodruff area. Is that real Nepean?
Old Nepean.
Old Nepean,
not where you guys live.
Yeah, I do find that strange. And I also getting quite a bit of flack on my North Manatee as it's created quite a storm here of people that seem to take it somewhat seriously.
I'm
taking it seriously, but it's I don't remember this pushback on South Rockcliffe. I felt like that was actually
nobody cared.
No, it's an excellent point.
But the Manatee people are so insulted to call Riverside South any part of Manatee whatsoever.
Morning, guys. After the strange end of the Cowboys game, how many times do you think Lee phoned the NFL last night? Cheers. It comes from Unsigned. Yes.
Yeah. I so sincerely, JR, this is no different than early on for Ottawa. If I was working with the Caps back in the day, what a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. You're built in to expect the worst, are you not?
Probably.
Like, you really are.
Been going on long enough now.
Oh, my God, yeah. And you're also, you're ready for whatever's coming your way when they lose, right? I mean, that's been, you know, the celebration.
They invent new ways to win, to lose, though.
But yesterday, so on the weekend, would you say more football fans were excited about Dallas losing or the Patriots losing?
That's an excellent question.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which
Could
team
be a poll
is despised
question.
More.
I'd say Patriots at this point, right?
Probably.
I mean, you know, that's been built up for so long. And then the other part, I think Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are great together, but it does, I don't think it lessens Bill Belichick to me, JR, but hey, there's no doubt when you look at it. And he went to a ready-made situation in Tampa, but even what he's pulling off and with all the injuries they had yesterday, JR, to imagine that fella's 44 years old, like, it's one thing to be hanging around professional sports like Jagr did and barely play, but to be playing at the highest level is really, really remarkable.
All right, our TSN 1200 Tool and Equipment Store web poll question for you today. Which league has better officiating, the NHL or the NFL? Now, I know we could lump in Major League Baseball, and Hammer, you'd be able to weigh in on that. And my personal favorite, the NBA, because quite frankly, I don't know how that's officiated.
Yeah.
You're a superstar. You get every single call.
But they're consistent on that, though, right, Jer? But in an NBA game what's going to happen. MLB is all about the balls and strikes. But I only say it in that I think the NHL officials, first of all, do a very good job. I also, maybe because they're on skates, I just think athletically, I'm just always focused on the NFL officials on how much older they appear to be and how hard some of them have a hard time getting around. And I just watch the games on the weekend. Like, we're always kind of dumping on the NHL. Oh, this is the worst officiating ever. And I don't think that's the case with the National Hockey League at all, where I think there's far more arguing about the NFL, but you may also just say that's because it's so darn popular.
And it's also top of mind for everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially
for sure.
Based on that Dallas game yesterday, in which they tied the NFL record with 14 penalties in a playoff game yesterday. So you are voting NHL as the best or better officiating of the two?
No, I sincerely mean that, Jerry. I don't watch many games where, you know, it just gets ridiculous. And I guess I go more to because I don't know as much about football. When I go to games in the CFL and the NFL, I just find it gets really old on a pedally after pedally. And as you pointed out, and I'm sure rightfully so, it's not like they were bad calls in the Dallas game. It's just also having to put them on TV on every call. Like, it just is like, come on, man. Like, just leave it alone or move on to the next play. So I'll go NHL, absolutely.
Hammer?
Yeah, I'm with the NHL as well. I think the NFL is just so inconsistent, and there always seems to be a storyline, not even media-driven, but just a storyline in terms of playoff games where you're always second-guessing some of the calls that could have been an either-or. Yeah. That just seems to plague the NFL consistently year in and year out. I don't think we see the same in the NHL, so my vote is for the NHL. Officiating.
Yeah, I go back to JR. What was it? Was it Cincinnati lost a couple of years ago on the pass interference? The crazy call at the end of the game?
I don't remember which.
Remember New Orleans? They were going to have a lawsuit, you know. And
oh, that was the Rams.
Yeah, where the Rams guy just clobbered him. And, you know, and as I said, I'm not saying the NFL doesn't. And then these are one and done, too. So I understand there's a lot of pressure. What's also kind of goes back to the funny thing, guys, is that for the richest sports league in North America and one in the world, is the fact that these guys are part-timers, right? And it's not like they're not making good money. Mm-hmm. But I still find that strange that you wouldn't put that money into and saying, hey, start guys at a young age around 30. You're going to be a full-time NFL official. And you're going to spend a lot of time on fitness and everything else, and you're going to get paid accordingly.
Yeah, but do you honestly think if you think the officiating is poor, it's because you don't think the guys are in shape?
Oh no!
I think the reason that you're seeing a lot of older guys is that they have the most experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think experience does count for something.
Oh no! Oh gosh, no! I totally do, Jerry. I'm only saying.
In other words, my point is, I don't think that full-time officials. If you think the officiating is bad, I don't think it's because they are so-called part-time. Yeah. Most of these guys, by the way, who are NFL officials, these are not guys that are digging ditches
five days a week.
These are guys that they're, you know, like lawyers, you know, they're not breaking their backs 5 days a week slaving over a hot you-know-what. Yeah. And then struggling to get to a game on Sunday.
No. And even if you didn't have much of another job, Jerry, I'm sure that they're
making... With apologies to all ditch diggers.
No, and I'm sure they're making good money. I guess it's more of an interesting conversation because I think since the National Hockey League a number of years ago, I think it was probably the 04-05 lockout where they really upped the salary. They really upped as far as linesmen what they were making. I think they brought in better, younger and better people.
All right, so which league has the better officiating? Right now, 65% of you say the NHL, 35% say the NFL. Again, sometimes when we put these questions up, it's a lot of what's top of mind.
Yeah.
If we were to ask you after an especially controversial Ottawa Senator penalty in a game, the results might be slightly different. I probably of the two, I would agree. It just seems like in the NFL... You can call something every single play if you wanted to. So kind of the give and take on that part of it. But I honestly don't think either league is officiated overly well. I just want consistency.
It's not an option on the poll question.
Yeah, exactly. If you're going to be bad, just be consistently bad. That's all.
See, I think the NHL officiating is terrific. I think their issue is with replay and with the war room or whatever is in Toronto. I think NHL officials do a great job.
More specifically, that goaltending interference.
Well, just anything that goes back to their hammer having really no idea. But I think the management of the game, and the other thing on this, and this is probably why my fitness thing, JR, it's not necessarily fitness. The NHL officials are luckier. First of all, there's four of them, but being on skates just gives you a lot better ability to get out of the way than, you know, it's tough on the NFL. I can imagine being on that field and trying to watch the play, get out of the way, get everything set at times could be an awful lot of work.
Sean in Orleans texts in, says, good morning, guys. Been thinking since your interview last week that Craig Button, Sens already have some good, great center prospects in Norris, Pinto, Stützle, Greg. If you're the Sens and you win the draft lottery, are you drafting Shane Wright or are you trading the pick? If so, what type of player are you targeting? Cheers. That comes from Sean in Orleans.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, Sean, in the sense of right from what I've seen, you know, he's a center, and as it sits today, and everyone says he's the best player, gosh, you draft him, and you worry about that later. And at the same time, JR, I haven't seen enough out of him that I'd say he's a lock to step in the NHL next year either. So, no, if I'm Ottawa, I'd pick him, and if you send him back to Kingston, it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Pick the best player.
Yeah, for sure.
Just pick
sure.
the best player. Yeah, if you have 19 centers.
Yeah.
Somebody will come knocking for your 19 centers.
And the trick of it, and you have to be in all these different modes, JR, and back to your point, and it does as an organization, at some point you sit down, and I think Ottawa in this last draft started thinking about, well, we've got a mix of these guys, and you want to get a bit harder.
Yeah.
But the other thing you run into really quickly is that as you advance into the next stage, as simple as, and I don't think they needed another goaltender, but as simple as Wallstat to Boucher right now, if you were sitting on the value of what you were trying to do to get a Jake Chychrun, and you said to them, listen, I'll give you Wallstat along with one of the young defensemen, you might have a chance. Where in essence, for what you've done out of Boucher right now, I'm not saying that you couldn't trade the fella, but there's of no real value to him right now. That's a bit of the trick of the trade of at times, yeah, I know I need a little something, but if you stuck with that policy, well, it's always going to help you, and especially as you turn into, at some point, hopefully a buyer if you're Ottawa.
Unsigned writes, I'm still not sold on Brännström, and mostly because of how he hasn't been dynamic enough to outweigh his diminutive stature. But one thing is clear. He's finally learning how to spin away from hits when picking up and dishing pucks in the corner, and that's a good sign. Kudos on the coaching staff for that. That comes from Unsigned.
Yeah, and I fully agree. And the next part of, and again, this is a bit of understanding, JR, when we break down a player. At the beginning of the season, though, he's clearly a better player than Mete Delzato or Brown. His deficiencies are his deficiencies, and I don't think long-term, unfortunately, I don't think he's a good enough skater for 5'9", JR, to really survive, especially in a bottom pairing on a very good hockey team.
Sean in Barrhaven writes, other than the obvious answer, why is there are there never any refs at a post-game presser while it seems okay to put an emotional winner or loser in front of the media? That's from Sean in Barrhaven. I can tell you, Sean, that there is a pool reporter, if we're talking about the NFL in particular, that does go in and interview the officials. So there was a reporter who went in and talked to the referee from the Raiders-Cincinnati game about that controversial inadvertent whistle and what happened and how that all played itself out. And so there is a transcript of that that is out there and is distributed. So the NFL does make them answer questions from the media, but it is not done in a public setting. Yeah. So why they choose to make that distinction and whether that distinction is important, I'm not sure how I feel about that. Yeah, but they do have to answer the questions.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it ever, JR. I don't find it. These guys are under pressure. It's going to happen. It's on their job evaluation. Nothing's going to be turned over. If the league can do it, to put a referee right after a game, how they're going to answer it, what you end up saying. You don't want them to come out and be brutally honest, only going to fire up a fan base. So I would never put them under that situation. As I said, I at least know from the National Hockey League, they get a much crap from their employer on a nightly basis. If that's not going to help any. Transparency, if you want to do something, let it come from the league office, but I would never have it from the officials.
Yeah, I think you make a fair point, and I think the fact that they do have to answer and that answer is put out in a public forum for fans to read, and hopefully the right question, you know, hopefully the right questions are asked. And if somebody is interested in that or the end of the Dallas game, which was also controversial, there's a big long transcript I went through last night on that as well. Like they're asked the questions. Like the one on the Dallas one was really interesting. Like the guy went really in depth as far as even thinking in terms of asking the referee in this case, like the umpire, the guy who spotted the ball, who ran into Prescott right at the end. Like, is that guy supposed to, you know, how close is he supposed to be as the play is moving up the field? You know, is it, you know, is he supposed to be within a certain distance or whatever? Like they were asked very specific questions about that very specific play, which I thought were really good, like really appropriate questions. And I thought the answers that the referee in this case gave were good answers to the questions that I think all fans, all of us have. We wonder about these sorts of things. Yeah. So I think it was questions asked, questions answered. Yeah. And as far as serving someone up in a public forum to the media to be disseminated up one side and down the other, I agree with you. I don't think that's necessary. I just want the questions asked and answered. I don't necessarily think the setting is that important.
And we talk about that term procedures. You use the term procedures, JR. Like, I'd love to know where, you know, I kind of watch that play, and it's awkward in the sense of if Dallas knew what they were doing, Prescott would have had the ball and the center would have got out of the way. Like, I kind of looked at it and thought, well, maybe the referee should come from the front and do the ball, but I never really watch, you know, where this is normally coming
from.
Well,
there was a time, and this changed, I don't know how many years ago, so the umpire used to be the guy that kind of stood right beside the middle linebacker, and then they changed it, and because he was getting in the way all the time, or they were actually creating plays where guys did rubs off the official, right, to keep defensive backs off them on crossing plays,
probably,
or whatever.
The hoodie.
So they moved the umpire to kind of the opposite side of the referee. So that's the reason they did that, was to get the umpire out of being in the middle of all of the plays. So that's the reason he's positioned where he's positioned.
Yeah, it makes sense. And like I said, I just, you know, all those little things yesterday, the guys running up and, well, first of all, when you see some of these guys come off the field, you understand they're a monster of a man. Like, that was almost a butt fumble when he ran into the center trying to get the ball, right?
Yeah.
Like,
exactly.
It's not like you're going to just kind of squeeze through. That big old butt's up in the air there. There's nowhere to go.
The answer is simple for Connor McDavid. It's a team full of fourth liners and press box players. Nurses a bit above average beer league goaltending. That comes from Bill. Back to our Connor McDavid discussion. Man, did that guy... Listen, he's never Mr. Sunshine and Lollipops. He, even at the best of times, Connor McDavid looks like the media availabilities are the last thing that he wants to do, which goes to your point of captains in Canadian media markets and how hard that is. But boy, oh boy... When you're a player of his stature in the situation he's been in now for as long as he's been in it, how difficult that must be to bite your tongue.
Oh, and it just sucks the life out of you, JR. And what Pooley brought up, and again, I'm so respectful of having had Dave as a player and what he talked about being in Philly and learning from young guys. Like, what he talked about in essence here, we're so focused on a media quote. To handle a hockey team and adversity in life and having guys come in that are having problems away from the rink, like you said, when you really have a good leadership group, it's just on another level where you'd look around the room and see Steve Yzerman at 19 years old and think, God, what a beautiful person, but he doesn't have a clue what my life's all about in my 30s.
Yeah, and Dave's other point, not just problems that your team may have away from, but how about when two teammates don't get along?
Oh, gosh.
So if you're, Connor McDavid is now 25, but even at 21 or 22, and you've got two 30-year-old teammates that, you know, are having big issues. First of all, you don't have a lot of life experience, let alone, you know, talking to guys who kind of are your peers, but kind of aren't.
No.
Because you just don't have a lot of life experience at 21.
And if I've grinded my way through the league and a guy comes in and seems like a nice guy, but all of a sudden is making $12.5 million, and even a couple of years ago, I think a big part of Puljujarvi going home was that he was alienated, right?
Yeah. Yep. Need a fin, not only a fin to win, you need a fin to talk. Yeah, exactly. All right, that'll put a wrap on the show. Thank you very much for all the feedback today.